News Network. Maybe the scariest thing there is today is truth in media, especially the news. Get not only the news, but the truth in the news and nothing else. From TNN, the Truth News Network. Without the other guy's spin, here's your host, Dan Newman.
Well, half the month is gone, half behind us. That means there's half in front of us. The glass is always half full at truthnewsnet.org. Hey, everyone, I'm Dan Newman. Welcome to today's program. You know, we've heard the term identity politics tossed around by politicians and members of the media for years. But it really became commonplace during the run-up to the 2008 election of Barack Obama as president, and its use expanded during his 8 years in office. It still lives with us in everyday conversations. So let's start today by answering this question. What is identity politics? Identity politics are political positions based on the interests and perspectives of social groups with which people identify. Identity politics includes the ways in which people's politics are shaped by aspects of their identity through loosely correlated social organizations. Examples include in these social organizations, some based on age, religion, social class or caste, culture, dialect, disability, education, ethnicity, language, nationality, sex, gender identity, generation, occupation, profession, race, political party affiliation, sexual orientation, settlement, urban and rural habitation, and veteran status. That's a bunch, isn't it? The term identity politics has been in use in various forms since the 1960s or 70s, but it has been applied with, at times, radically different meanings by different populations. One aim of identity politics has been for those feeling oppressed to voice their felt oppression in terms of their own experience by a process of consciousness raising. One of the older written examples of it can be found in the April 1977 statement of the black feminist group Combahee River Collective, which was subsequently reprinted in a number of anthologies, and Barbara Smith and the Combahee River Collective have been credited with coining the term. For example, in their terminal statement, they said, and this is a direct quote, "As children, we realized that we were different from boys and that we were treated different. For example, when we were told the same breath to be quiet both for the sake of being ladylike and to make us less objectionable in the eyes of white people." In the process of consciousness raising, actually life sharing, we began to recognize the commonality of our experiences and, from the sharing and growing consciousness, to build a politics that will change our lives and inevitably end our oppression. We realize that the only people who care enough about us to work consistently for our liberation are us. Our politics evolve from a healthy love for ourselves, our sisters, and our community, which allows us to continue our struggle and work. This focusing upon our own oppression is embodied in the concept of identity politics. We believe that the most profound and potentially most radical politics come directly out of our own identity, as opposed to working to end someone else's oppression. That's from Zyla Eisenstein, 1978. That comes from the Combahee River Collective statement. Some groups have combined identity politics and Marxist social class analysis and class consciousness, the most notable example being the Black Panther Party. But this is not necessarily characteristic of the form. Another example is MOVE, members of which mix black nationalism with anarcho-primitivism, which is a radical form of green politics based on the idea that civilization is an instrument of oppression, advocating the return to a hunter-gatherer society. I'm not joking, folks, that's real. Identity politics can be left-wing or right-wing, with examples of the latter being Ulster loyalism, Islamism, and Christian identity movements. During the 1980s, the politics of identity became very prominent, and it was linked to a new wave of social movement activism. The mid-2010s saw a marked rise in identity politics, including white identity politics in the United States. This phenomenon is attributed to increased demographic diversity and the prospect of whites becoming a minority in America. Such shifts have driven many to affiliate with conservative causes, including those not related to diversity. This includes the presidential election of Donald Trump, who won the support of prominent white supremacists such as David Duke and Richard B. Spencer. And we might add, Trump disavowed both of those gentlemen. Identity politics defined by leftists. So, as we break this down and talk about what it is, let's look at what three noted leftists have to say about the identity of identity politics itself. The first from Charles W. Mills. He titled his, "Whose Identity Politics?" The cause of Donald Trump's stunning electoral victory will be debated for years. FBI Director James Comey's October 28th letter about Clinton's emails, her basket of deplorables comment, the Democratic campaign's neglect of the Rust Belt states, and so on. But the pernicious and enduring role of identity politics was crucial. I refer, of course, to the white racial identity politics that have shaped the United States from its birth. Needless to say, this is neither the standard narrative nor the usual framing. For the orthodox white left, now claiming a cheerless "we told you so" vindication, identity politics is their politics. Particularistic, pandering to special interest, balkanizing, ours, of course, are supposedly very different. Universalist, general interest, unifying. Not recognition, but redistribution. Not identity, but material inequality. Not race, but class. That was from Charles W. Mills. And I'm sure you understand exactly from that what identity politics really is. Let's look at what Walter Ben Michaels had to say in his essay about identity politics titled "The Universe of Exploitation." The defensible heart of identity politics is its commitment to opposing forms of discrimination like racism, sexism, and homophobia. I share that commitment. But opposing discrimination today has no more to do with the left politics than do equally powerful ethical commitments against, say, violence or dishonesty. Why? Because the core of a left politics is its critique of and resistance to capitalism, its commitment to decommodifying education, healthcare, and housing, and creating a more economically equal society. Neither hostility to discrimination nor the accompanying enthusiasm for diversity makes the slightest contribution to accomplishing any of these goals. Just the opposite, in fact. They function instead to provide inequality with a meritocratic justification. If everyone has an equal opportunity to succeed, there's no injustice when some people fail. And the third analysis of what identity politics is comes from Linda Hirschman. It's titled "Expanding the Circle." The call for the left to abandon its appeals to not white men violates the very premises of the American project. The Declaration of Independence describes a world in which all men are created equal, where they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among those are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Even the slaveholder's constitution prefaced its enterprise with the purpose of securing the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. At the hearings for her confirmation to the Supreme Court in 1993, Ruth Bader Ginsburg stated it precisely. The American project started with white men's freedom and equality and has been, for more than two centuries, all about expanding the circle to include more and more people in that blessed plot. It has almost always been the left that forces such expansions. One argument for disregarding identity politics seems to be that it would free the left to focus solely on reducing economic inequality. But in the United States, where so many issues are entangled with race, such a turn to the material would still have a powerful racial element. That explains, at least in part, why confronting inequality has been so much harder to do here than in the mostly white states of Western Europe. The future of identity politics, and thus the moral and political mission of the left, is predicated on its capacity to organize people who are not white men. That was from Linda Hirschman. Before that, you heard from Walter Ben Michaels, and initially, Charles W. Mills. Both the gentleman and Ms. Hirschman are avowed leftist, and their definition of identity politics is definitely a leftist explanation. When we come back, we're going to break it down in our terms, layman's terms. That's just ahead at the Truth News Network.
Long live the courageous, the tenacious, the ones who push forward and give back. Long live the greater good, the helping hand, those who fall and get back up. And long live the truck with the strength to overcome. The will to outwork. And the commitment to outlast them all. Ram, proven to last.
Undeniably the go-to source for nonpartisan, spin-free news from the world. TNN, the Truth News Network at dnewman.org.
We're talking about identity politics today. Do you understand it now? Let's break it down. The leftist writers of the definitions of identity politics above each made broad assumptions on which they based their opinions in their writings. Identity politics comes from the natural and human desire for connection and acceptance, especially in the information age where we all have immediate access to a variety of symbols, media to reinforce this, and social media to build groups and conversations based on this, which reinforces identities, either real or perceived. Whether we identify with a thing, a group, or an idea, and whether the desire to make this personal identification comes from within us or from others, the end result is that the values of the thing or idea are being merged with our own identity, the identity that we have chosen to represent who we are. That helps us find acceptance with some groups and individuals, yet, obviously, alienates us from others. I do not think identity politics and the practice of labeling those who identify with the groups listed in paragraph one above is reliable for accuracy and certainly are not sustainable. Why? Think it through. For it to be actually accurate, it must either be irrelevant for the process or someone or some entity must be appointed for the determination of what category any and every person falls into. Self-identification is currently the default process used for such determination. But just because a person thinks they are something does not necessarily mean what they think is accurate. I've told this story many times before. For years, I owned an arena football team, a professional football team. Every season, my head coach would ask me to say something at the team's first meeting prior to training camp. Knowing I was standing in front of a group of really good athletes who each would prefer to be in an NFL training camp instead of this one, I always would ask one of the players I randomly selected, "Who are you?" Inevitably, that player would respond that he's a football player from Timbuktu, that he was a wide receiver or a defensive lineman or a quarterback. I would then ask the identical question to several other players. In my 14 years of doing this, I never had one player give a correct answer. The correct answer, I am a man. I didn't ask what you do. I asked, who are you? You know the truthnewsnet.org banner. You've heard it before, you'll hear it again. Just because you think something is right doesn't mean it's right. And just because you think something is wrong doesn't mean it's wrong. And I understand that applies to me too. Wow, this is tiresome, isn't it? Whatever happened to, look at that bear over there. That conclusion is too simple. Identity politics demands the bear itself be brought into this conversation to determine who it is. Is it a grizzly or a brown bear? Is it a male or female? Is it part of a group of bears called a sloth? Or does it live alone? Is it Canadian, Alaskan, or American? Does it prefer berries and nuts, or is it carnivorous? Is it even a bear? That list of questions can go on and on and on and on. But using identity politics, these and others on such a list always come into play. Always. Identity politics in America has taken on a life of its own. It is no longer just about politics. Rather, politics is now 100% about identity. And who determines the identity of every individual? Whoever each person has given the authority to make their identity decision. Sometimes that is the person themselves. Sometimes the right to that determination is surrendered to someone else or some other group. One problem with identity politics is that it is more about shared identity and less about substance and individualism. It is a collectivist animal, which gives individuals identity. Its nature has a host of nasty implications. On one hand, it can make people lazy. They turn to a shared identity instead of building their own identity. And believe me, that's a whole lot of work. Figuring out who you are and putting all of the layers in place to make that be who you are. The other problem is, we don't always get to choose our own identity. Another aspect here is what I would call intellectual laziness. It is the idea that since you are part of a group, you can sort of let the group do the work for you. It is the idea that you can be Black Lives Matters, BLM, just by putting on the t-shirt or tweeting about it. That just because this figure is X gender or has X amount of wealth, we will or we won't support them. Just because they are Democrat, just because they are Republican, etc., we can say, I am X, so I should be treated Y. Or you can say, don't treat my Z just because I am X. Shared identity is good, but we should be operating on our own merit, and we should not resort to such levels of collectivism that we lose our individual identities. You know, this is getting tiring, isn't it? Final word for you. This can be way too complicated. Every person has the right to personal identification. Society has pushed on most of us to identify ourselves based on what we do instead of who we are. When we do so, when what we do changes for any reason, it throws our personal identity out the door, and that often destroys us. Thanks for enduring this conversation and listening to me and the three liberal writers I quoted here to explain what identity politics is. It is unfortunate for us all that this terminology has become a part of everyday American jargon. And it's also unfortunate that it being here forces us all to necessarily grasp an understanding of its meanings, its purposes, and reasons for being included in American political conversations. Try not to make it so complicated. Life is so complicated already. I've tried hard to keep things simple in my life. It's easiest to do when one adopts the thought process behind this understanding. Listen closely. What is it? It quacks and it waddles. So it must be a duck. Hey, don't let me see you waddle. You'll certainly be labeled if I see that. As usual, folks, thanks for joining us today. Let us hear from you. Post below or send me an email at dan@truthnewsnet.org. You have a great day. We'll see you soon at the Truth News Network.
We don't tell you what to think,
but we give you truth to think about. This is TNN, the Truth News Network.
TruthNewsNet.org.